Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Hour. This is Sarah Powers. I am solo today without my co-host, Megan Francis, because you are listening to one of our Voices interview episodes. We do interviews on the first Friday of every month, and we try to bring you conversations with moms and women and authors and experts in the parenting space that offer something that maybe Megan and I can't speak to personally. And today's conversation is no different. I am talking with Casey Clifford. I met Casey at this year's Mom 2.0 conference. She is a singer-songwriter and a writer and a storyteller and a mom of two from Oklahoma City. And today we are talking about her journey with infertility. So this is a topic that we have gotten many, many requests to cover over the years. And since it isn't something Megan or I experienced personally, we wanted to bring somebody on who could speak really honestly about the heartbreak and the struggle of infertility, the process of going through fertility treatments, and just somebody who would share their story in a really honest way. Now, we know, all of us, Megan and I and Casey, that no one fertility or infertility story represents all of those out there. We know that not all of them have happy endings, that there's a lot of grief and loss. And so that's something that we're aware of and want to be sensitive to today. Having said that, Casey's story involves quite a bit of fertility treatment. It involves the cost, and we talk about her marriage. We talk about becoming a mom later in life. We talk about motherhood after infertility. So there are some themes throughout Casey's story that I think those of you with friends who've gone through this, or those of you who've been through it yourselves, will really see as kind of a common experience. And so that is what we're hoping with today's interview. I do want to give a little heads up that because of today's topic, Casey and I go into a little bit of detail about how babies are conceived the old-fashioned way, what kind of help she and her husband had to have medically. And so if those are topics that you think are sensitive for little ears or that might bring up questions that you don't feel like answering today, you have been warned. It is technically a very G-rated conversation, but at the same time, these discussions involve things like intimacy and marriage and, you know, surgery and all these kinds of things. So just giving you a heads up there. So I'm going to get to my conversation with Casey shortly. First, we're going to take a quick break. Well, we are really excited to talk about our new partnership with Jane.com today. Jane is an online boutique daily deals retailer where, Megan, you and I continue to score amazing deals on fashion, shoes, accessories, and home decor. My sister, my much younger and hipper sister, turned me onto Jane a few years ago, and I love scrolling the app on my phone for new deals. The styles are really fashion forward, and the prices are unbelievable. And you guys know I can't resist a cute pair of shoes for like $12. All summer right now, I am wearing these rose gold flat sandals that I got on Jane. And I also recently scored a pair of linen pants with this comfy fold-over waistband for $20. If you haven't checked out Jane, use our link and you'll go right to a page with the latest deals in women's fashion. We're part of their affiliate program, which means if you make a purchase through our link, you're also helping support the podcast too. And speaking of that, Jane loves supporting women-owned businesses. So you're going to see 350 to 500 deals a day on their site. And those deals come from more than 1,500 women-owned, mom-owned businesses. So we love that. Again, you're going to go to themomhour.com/Jane, J-A-N-E, to start shopping.
Okay, everyone, last call for our listener survey. This is your chance to let us know what you think of the show and what you'd like to hear more of, maybe what you'd like to hear less of. Hey, we can't make any promises, but we want to hear from you. And we've already heard from hundreds of you. Thank you so much. And we've learned some really interesting things. For example, 37% of you listen while driving or commuting, and 44% listen while doing chores or taking care of things around the house. Do you fall into one of those categories or maybe another one? This is your chance to tell us. The survey is still up at themomhour.com/survey, and it takes just a couple of minutes to fill out. You can do it right now on your phone even. Again, just head to themomhour.com/survey. Thanks, everybody.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening today. Here is my conversation with Casey Clifford. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Casey. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So excited about having you on the show and about our conversation today. It's really important and a topic that we've had many listeners request from us. And I just feel like you kind of came into our life. We'll talk a little more about that later, but I'm just so glad that you are the voice that we get to talk today about infertility with. So thank you for being here.
Oh, I'm really excited to be that voice, and it's an honor to get to talk about the topic.
Yeah. Okay. So we are going to kind of go into your infertility journey, but before we do that, just briefly tell our listeners where you are now, where you live, and who lives in your house with you, and just a little bit about what you do for work. So we'll see the present day, and then we'll go back a little bit.
Sure. I live in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, with my husband, David, and my two children, Beatrice, who is almost 7, and Hollis, who just turned 4. I am a singer, songwriter, and storyteller by trade and by passion. And I make records and tell stories, and I do a lot of writing.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're going to get to hear some of your music today. And just tell everybody, because I think your musical style is one of my favorites, but tell everybody how you describe the kind of singer songwriting you do now.
Well, it's definitely evolved, but I have traditionally been in the world of folk, but it's kind of a poppy folk. Mm-hmm. And I have historically written on guitar, but my new music is all on piano. So that's kind of an interesting question for me right now.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's a new thing.
Well, it's
after
funny.
All these years.
Yeah. Well, it's funny at this stage in all of our careers, musician or not, it's not an easy question to answer, right? Like I
sure.
started out as a writer and now I'm a podcaster. So yes.
Yeah.
Well, we're excited to hear some of your music in just a little bit, but we are talking today about infertility. And of course your story is unique to you, doesn't represent every story about infertility, but I would love for you to just kind of tell it in your own words, go back to when you started struggling to conceive, and I'll guide you and kind of jump in with questions, but I know this is a powerful story and I would love to hear you tell it.
Sure. I always wanted to be a mom. I think that's an important point.
Yeah.
And not everybody does, you know, but I always pictured my life with children. And I feel like I gave myself a lot of lead with my dreams of being a musician and being on the road. And honestly, I thought that I had time. Mm. I just thought, well, there'll be time for that. Kids, they'll come. It'll come. And it's interesting when you have a dream, because like a music dream that takes you on the road and you're, you know, that like starving artist mentality. Mm-hmm. I think you're always kind of looking at the next iron in the fire and thinking, well, you know, maybe after that happens, then we'll start trying. Mm-hmm. Or maybe after, you know, so I kept kind of pushing children back for a number of years, because I wanted to be really full on in my music dream. And then as I got into my mid-30s and my husband and I were married, I got married at 28.
Okay.
And we were on the road together. I guess that's an important thing to note.
Mm-hmm. He's also a musician.
He's also a musician. And so we toured together full time. And as I got older, I just thought, you know, it's time to start trying. And I don't know what that looks like. And I had a lot of emotional baggage about not knowing how I was going to do music and motherhood. And, mm-hmm. and that's a whole other podcast. Mm-hmm. But, so then we started trying, and it's funny because you think that as a young woman, even as a high schooler, I remember thinking about sex and pregnancy and thinking, well, if you do it once, you can get pregnant.
Right. Like, we are sort of told that.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's kind of like the scared, you know, abstinent sort of
right.
thing. Like if you do it once, you could have a baby. Like, and so I think most women go into it that way. Like we think, okay, I'm going to, and I was no different. Like I thought, well, as soon as we start trying, like we're going to, you know, I'm going to go off my birth control and we're just going to do this thing and we're going to make a baby because that's how that happens.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go off the birth control and you wait and month after month. And at first you try to like, just not think about it, or you, okay, well, it didn't work out, or, you know, and then you, for me, my personality, I, you know, started to get worried and then, you know, you get a lot of, I had a lot of, critical voices in my 30s and my early 30s about waiting. And a lot of people are like, well, don't wait too long, or, you know, TikTok, like, you know, because, you know, people are so rude and they ask you, well, why aren't you guys having children yet? Yeah. So you've been married for several years. And I mean, and don't people start asking you that the minute you get married? Yeah. Like, when are you going to give them some grandchildren? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, when are you going to get out of my bedroom? Like, you know, when are you going to get out of my life decisions? Yeah. Like, so we started trying, and just it wasn't happening. And I tried to stay calm mm-hmm. month after month. And it's such a, how would I describe it? It's such a stressful, but it's month after month, you know, it's like you, for a woman who ovulates regularly, and has regular periods, you have a 4 week, roughly 28 day reminder that you're not pregnant every single time.
And I would imagine there's kind of a swing, like a buildup of anticipation and a hope, and then sort of the disappointment, and then it starts over again.
Yeah. Yeah. And really, I mean, in not in terribly graphic terms, but then there's the blood.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that red signal every month that you didn't do it, it didn't work, you know. And we were musicians. We had no insurance of any kind, no health insurance. And so after a year or so, I kept thinking, well, maybe it's time to get some tests done, or what's going on. But I knew I was ovulating. I was having regular periods. I hadn't had PCOS or any sort of, you know, cysts or endometriosis. You know, like there was all sorts of, my mother had had a hysterectomy at 36.
Okay.
And a full hysterectomy because of cysts in her uterus.
Okay.
And so I suspected, because all that kind of stuff is really genetic, I thought, well, maybe there's something like that. But I'd had my normal well checks, and nothing was, you know, my normal yearly annuals, and nothing, you know, nothing was disturbing. And my doctor just kept saying, well, just, you know, keep trying. And
at this point, are you like 35 at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 35 ish, like probably in 35, 30, going into 36. By the time I was 36, I had started tracking everything, right? So I was doing it all by myself. I was doing, taking my temperature, checking my mucus, you know, obsessively reading blogs and internet information, which is really not your friend. I mean, I think you can build community, but it can make you real crazy in that process. And I started trying to lose weight. I've struggled with weight and body stuff my whole life. And so I've been up and down the scale, and, you know, got a lot of messages about, well, maybe it's because you're overweight, you know, okay, well, maybe I should be thinner, you know? Mm-hmm. So I lost 100 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, well, this is it. You know, if it was weight, then this is, then I fixed
that.
Checked that box, right. Yeah. And it just didn't happen. And we did not have the money at the time to do any extra anything. And on my 37th birthday, I woke up not pregnant. Mm-hmm. I was at the Kerrville Folk Festival, and I was performing, and I got my period that morning, and I was devastated. Mm-hmm. And I just was so at the end of myself.
Can we jump in? I would love for you to talk a little bit about your marriage and your partnership during that time. I mean, I know that is an entire other podcast as well, but you've just described a period of, you know, 2 or 3 years or a year and a half or whatever it was.
Yeah. 3 years. Probably.
Yeah. So talk about the partnership part of that during that, you know, and take that in whatever direction you want.
Sure. I think that fertility is just brutal on a marriage.
Yeah.
And, I think it's an important side note really quick here to acknowledge that there's male infertility and female infertility. I have not experienced male infertility in my marriage, so I don't know what that feels like, and really am not qualified to speak to that. Mm-hmm. I only know what it feels like to be the woman whose body isn't working. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was so lonely. And my husband, David, is incredibly tender, and he listens well, and he's in tune. You know, I feel like, especially at that time in our marriage, he really heard me. We were on the road together. We had nothing but time together. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it was a well-covered topic of conversation. Mm. And I was emotionally processing as month after month after month, you know, and he was listening to me. But it is a very, very lonely thing to go through as a woman. And to feel like your partner, the person that you love, that you committed to, kind of under a certain guise of terms, right? Like you both knew that you wanted this thing that was family. And you both acknowledged, yes, we want kids. And that was part of what you discussed before you made the covenant with each other. You know, it's like, yes, this is the thing. And then you can't hold up your end of the bargain. And so it's incredibly, I just felt really guilty. And I felt guilty that the time wasn't working out and that our years were slipping away. And the older that we got, it felt like I was taking something from him, you know, and that, and the strain that it puts on a marriage is just formidable. I mean, it just, every month your sex life becomes a science experiment. It's like, okay, well, let's time it out. Is the mucus right? Is the, okay, babe, like, you know, and for us, it was like, we were on the road. So it was like, okay, the gig is over. Okay, we got to go have sex right now in someone else's house or in a hotel room or in this Airbnb sort of place. Like, okay, let's do that thing. I mean, it was just, it was crazy. Like it's crazy.
And we're talking about 3 years, not, you know, I have experienced that for 5 or 6 months and kind of seen the hilarity and the frustration and the range of emotions. But I would imagine that the length of time we're talking about is really, really impactful on even the strongest of relationships. So I'm glad you were willing to speak to that. I didn't mean to sidetrack you. We left off on your 37th birthday.
Yeah. So it was my 37th birthday. I was playing the Kerrville Folk Festival and I woke up bleeding. And we had done all the things that month to try to ensure a pregnancy and it hadn't happened. And I don't quite remember honestly, but it could have been one of those months where I was a few days late. You know, there's, your body is so mean. The process is so brutal that way. Like you've got everything written down in a spreadsheet, you know, like it's all there and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I should be bleeding by now. Is it happening? Am I pregnant? It's too early to test. Is it, you know, to say that your mind is in just consumed with the process and the questions and the hope and the sadness, you know, is really putting it lightly. Because it just doesn't ever leave you during that time. And so when I woke up bleeding, I was done. I was so tired. I was really discouraged. And I felt like I'm a real personal growth person. And I felt like, am I just railing against this thing that I'm never supposed to have? Like, am I just supposed to go make records? And that had been my, you know, people for years had been asking us rudely where our children were. And I had kind of developed a way to kind of deflect it. And I just said, you know, I make records, not babies, you know, like just kind of like, please stop talking to me about this. Like, and so I thought, well, maybe this is just a sign that I am supposed to, that I'm 37. Like you start, the older you get, you start to think, if I had a baby now, then I would be this old when the baby was graduating from high school. And I would be that, like, you think about, what am I signing the kid up for? What am I signing? Like, this is the rest of my life. You know, like it just kind of makes you crazy in your brain. But I surrendered the idea of being ever having children that day. And I was just exhausted from it and so sad. But I just thought, you know what? I give up. Like, I can't. I needed a break from the circus of the mental gymnastics and the emotional roller coaster of the process of trying to manage my own fertility and my own conception process. Yeah,
it's like a job.
It is. So the week that I got back from Kerrville, I had started actually recording my last studio record that I made in 2000. We recorded in 2011 and it was released in 2012. And so I was in the studio and we went to dinner with a friend who is a physician, and she'd been following my fertility struggles and was super, gosh, just always wants to help, mm-hmm. you know? And so we were talking about it and what could be going on and why, if we thought I was ovulating, why I wouldn't be conceiving without any known, mm-hmm. you know, fertility issues like PCOS or, and so she said, you know what, I am going to call the head of reproductive medicine at OU. She's a friend and I'm just going to run this by her. She was like, you know, I think the easiest thing we should do is get David tested. Cause we'd never had David tested, mm-hmm. but we suspected that it was my fault. And so we had him tested and she got his results back. And that's like the cheapest thing you can do. It was like, right. I mean, I want to say it was like $120 okay. to get his sperm tested for motility. And so we did that. And when the test got back, she was like, okay, I see these and everything looks good, but I'm just going to check with my friend at OU about this one thing. And I just want to ask her about what she would recommend for you. And so she called her and then she called me back and she said, and I was in the studio. I'll never forget. I was sitting there. My producer was recording drum tracks and I get this call and I step out and she said, hey, she was like, I just talked to Dr. Craig at OU and she just opened up a study for unexplained infertility because it's a research hospital, a okay. teaching hospital. And she said, she just opened up a study and she said that if you'll call the office, and tell them that she asked you to call, that they will see if you would be a candidate to kind of see what's going on and maybe get some free fertility treatments.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh. And so funny. It's 5 days from the day that I just laid it down mm-hmm. and was like, forget it. Like, yeah. I can't do this by myself. Like I'm done. It's not meant to be, I guess I'm laying down my dream of having children. Like this is it, you know? And then here comes this, you know, this other thing. And
did you, can I ask, when you had that moment of kind of surrender or acceptance, was there a part of you in the back of your mind that said, maybe acceptance is part of the strategy of getting there? Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I mean, was it kind of like you were setting aside the pain that comes with hoping? Or was it really like you really thought this wasn't going to happen and you were just moving forward, or a little bit of both?
I think in retrospect, I would say a little bit of both. But in that moment, I was really giving up. Mm-hmm. Like emotionally, I was like, I can't do, I'm done. Like yeah. I'm at the end of myself with this. And I also was like, as I think most of us aware women are, you know, I was really going after in my personal life, self-care and radical kindness and the idea that like, I didn't have to put myself through the ringer on yeah. every single thing, my perfectionism. And
right.
so in that moment, I thought, I just need to stop. I need a break. Like I can't, I'm just done. I just felt like I was trying to put a square peg in a round hole and I was tired.
So it felt like almost an act of kindness to yourself.
Yeah.
Really.
Just saying like, Casey, you can stop. It's
right.
okay.
No, go ahead.
No, you're fine.
I want to play a little bit of the song Broken Things because I think it speaks to, well, I know it does. You told me and I've listened to it. this kind of, battle between perfectionism and acceptance. And I wonder if you want to set up the song for us and also kind of talk about this whole 3 years of trying is really like, it's you're after an you know, what was at the time almost an unattainable idea. You have to keep showing up month after month. And at the same time, you're trying to accept what is. I mean, really hard work. So I don't know if you want to talk about that and just set up a little bit of this song.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and you hit the nail on the head when you said you're trying to accept what is.
Yeah.
I was working with a therapist at the time and we were talking about learning how to love what is, mm. not just accept it, mm. but learning how to say, call it good. Mm-hmm. And I had a person once tell me that you have expectations. And if you think of that in a really high place, mm-hmm. and then you have reality and you think of that on a lower plane, and that the gap in between them is anxiety.
Oh man. There's like got a little bit of goosebumps there.
It's like, oh, like I often joke like, oh yes, I own a home there. Like right.
you know, in that space, in that wide open
yes.
space. Me too. Are we neighbors?
I think we are. We were meant to be. But like that place of like, oh yes. Oh, I have owned that space, that place of not being able to come to life on life's terms, but mm. always trying to get it to be something different. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this song, Broken Things, was kind of this feeling of, well, you know, when we're talking about fertility, I felt like the broken thing, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. like I felt like the thing that was like, this is all I have. Like, this is who I am. And I am trying so hard to change. Cause the thing about fertility is that you think you can control it because of those messages from when we were kids, like you do it once you get a baby, mm-hmm. like you better not do it. You're going to get yourself pregnant. Like, and you think, oh, all I have to do is this. It's like going to the store. I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to buy bow tie pasta because there's an aisle and a place where you get to go choose that for yourself. Mm-hmm. And fertility, you think you have that sort of control over it. And the truth for some of it is that some of us is that we super don't mm-hmm. like there's a mystical part of it. And so my coming, bringing my expectations of my life and what it was going to look like and my chance to be a mom, you know, into a place of peace and acceptance and reality was a difficult yeah. struggle.
Well, and I think that so even those of us who haven't been through infertility can feel what that feels like when there's that gap between expectations and reality. I think so yeah. many moms relate to that. Okay, so should we listen to a little bit of Broken
yeah,
Things?
Okay. Let's do.
I'm ice and I am fire. You are meek and mild. Wanna drink your cool water. Wanna bear you a child. Some wishes never get to you. Grew their wings. And these expectations might just be the death of me. And somewhere between hell and sheer happiness, there's a house by the ocean side. And we'll fill it with dreams and all the broken things that the morning washed in with the tide.
Oh my goodness, I know you said that is a fan favorite, and I'm so glad our listeners got to hear that. And of course, at the end of today's show and in the show notes, we'll make sure everybody knows how to go listen to the rest of that song and all your music. But let's come back to this moment where you saw some potential help and how that led to little Beatrice.
Yeah. So I've made that call from the recording studio. I called the office that day and talked to a sweet woman at the front. She's like, okay, I need to get some information from you. And then we will call you back and let you know if you're a candidate for the study. And she said, oh, and by the way, we need to do a bunch of tests on you. They'll all be free. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a bunch of tests on you and then we'll know for sure if you qualify. And I was like, you're going to do like all the tests. She's like, yeah, we need to do this and this. And wow. because we have to figure it out, but it's just a part of the study. You just get all of that for free. And as like a starving artist, yeah. folk person, you know, yeah. we make jokes that like I'm a folk musician. I make tens of dollars yeah. a day, you know, like I was like, you're going to give me free tests. Like it was just this, like, it's just one of those lessons of like, you lay it down yeah. and see what happens, you know? But so I qualified, you know, fast forward, I had all the tests. They could find nothing wrong, mm-hmm. With my fertility in the testing. And they determined that I was a candidate for the study. And the study was, testing a combination of medications that were given by injection okay. and IUI, which stands for intrauterine insemination.
Mm-hmm. I always say it's the turkey baster method.
It is the turkey baster method.
That just helps me yes. remember the difference in the acronyms. Yep.
Totally the turkey baster method. And so basically what that means is my husband gives a sperm sample, in clinic, and then they take it via sort of a glorified turkey baster. And, I took a series of shots. And so I would have shots. They had to teach me how to give myself shots in the stomach. I'll never forget, we were in this exam room with the sweetest nurse who ended up being like our person at the fertility clinic. Her name is Michelle. Mm. And she brought in this sharps container and, you know, the red sharps box and a whole thing of needles. And then she, like, a fake bottle of, to show us how. And she's like showing David, assuming that he was going to be the person to do it and help. And she's like, so you pull back some air and you push it in. And David just looked at it like she like was doing her thing and looks up at him and he is just white as a sheet. And he was like, I can't, honey, I'm sorry, I can't give you shots. Like, I can't do this. And I was like, and I was really, I was kind of pissed at the moment. Cause I was like, oh, of course you can't. Like, yes, of course. Like, please let this be on me, you know?
Right. I'll take this one.
Yeah. I was like, okay. So I'm like, step aside, like, Michelle, show me what I need to do. Like, I want kids bad enough to give myself multiple shots a day in the stomach. Let's do this. There's no time for being a weenie about it. Let's go. You know, like, so, I don't think I've ever said the word weenie in a sentence until that moment. So that's kind of funny. But so she showed me how to give myself shots and I had a regimen of shots. You know, fertility treatments are a ton of blood work, a ton of ultrasounds. I remember that first cycle, I was so afraid because Dr. Craig was waiting for my follicles to mature and they're doing, you know, regular ultrasounds like every 2 to 3 days. And they're checking the size of your follicles and they're measuring them like on ultrasound and you see them growing and you see ones come and go. And you learn so much about how the body works and it's super fascinating. And I remember thinking, cause she was like, okay, I think we're going to, you know, up your medicine here and we're going to wait a couple more days. And I was kind of past what would normally have been my ovulation window. And I looked at Dr. Craig kind of anxiously and I said, well, what if I, is my body going to ovulate? Like, what if it ovulates and I miss it? You know, like I was so like hopeful that it was going to work. And she said, oh, she's like, Casey, I want you to think of your body kind of like a car. And I have hijacked the operating system to your car and I am driving. And she was like, those follicles are not going to go anywhere until I tell them to. And we're going to tell them to by this trigger shot that you'll take at a very specific time of day, like 36 hours before we do. It was just like this whole, you know, it was just like, so I am in charge. So you don't need to worry that your body's going to like do something. You know, she's like, as much as I can be, I'm driving the car.
Wow. What an interesting shift for you having that, right. Like that, you know, feeling of needing to control for so long, feeling like you and your body were somehow not on the same page and have somebody say, I'm in control. That's
It was fascinating and it was so relieving.
I bet.
Like I didn't have to write anything down. Yeah. There were no spreadsheets. Someone else was handling the process for me. And I was just like, okay, I trust you. And she, you know, she was so awesome. Dr. Craig, her name's Latasha Craig at OU Reproductive Medicine. And I have to give her a shout out because she gave me my family and her willingness to be honest with me, like brutally honest about where we were, but also just like aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know, she knew that I wanted children and that I was willing to put my body through whatever that took to get them. And she was like, okay, let's do this. You know, like, so she wasn't afraid to push the limits. And so miraculously we conceived Beatrice, on the very first cycle and I had cleared my tour schedule. So like they said, okay, you're in this study and you need to come off the road. We need you to commit 4 months to us. Well, I was our income. And so it was like, you need to come off the road. So I came off, I cleared my schedule, cleared my calendar for 4 months. And David got an adjunct teaching position at a school of rock, like College of Rock. And we like counted our pennies and made it work. And then I got pregnant on the first cycle. Wow. And the moment that they called to tell me, you know, you have a blood test on a certain day to determine your HCG levels. And it's kind of like, it'll show before a stick, before you pee on a stick and all of that, you know. And it was January 3rd was the day that I found out that I'll never forget it, that I was pregnant with Beatrice and, that she was due in September. And then, you know, and I'd never been pregnant.
Yeah.
I mean, I had never heard those words.
Oh like, my gosh.
And it was like, it worked. Like I was just floored.
Disbelief. Just floored.
Like happy new year. You know? Like happy, it is a new year. It is a new time. You get to be pregnant. And of course then as a 30, by then I was well, I was still 37, I guess. And I thought, oh, now I have to stay pregnant. Right. Because you have all those women who conceive and miscarry and all the losses that so many women experience with infertility. And so then I didn't know if my body could stay pregnant.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, and so, so there's just, so it's like, okay, let's pile on another level of fear and trusting.
Another like big gap between expectations and what you can control. And oh my gosh. Well, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this story. And so, yeah, we will be right back. Well, my mother-in-law retired earlier this year from her job of more than 30 years, and it was a really big deal. Brian flew out for the party and everything, but we were really struggling for a gift idea, something meaningful and different. And oh my gosh, I'm so glad that paintyourlife.com came on my radar right about this time because it ended up being the perfect gift. We used Paint Your Life to have an original oil painting created from a snapshot I'd taken last summer of my oldest sitting on a porch swing at my mother-in-law's house in Rhode Island. The painting turned out incredible, and I just got a text from my mother last saying she got it, and it blew her mind. So here's how it works. You upload a photo to paintyourlife.com, and mine was not a professional photo, just an iPhone snapshot. And they match you with an artist who will render an original piece of art inspired by that photo. You can even choose the artist whose work you like best and work with them throughout the process. There's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, they'll refund your money. And it's really fun to browse the site and see what other people are commissioning. You can do a landscape, you can do a pet, a portrait, and there's different styles too.
Yeah, I did an acrylic painting because it was just something I had snapped of the beach with my kids like in the water. And I loved the photo. It was one of those I kept going back to over and over to look at on my phone. But I did acrylic because it says on the Paint Your Life website that acrylics tend to be a little bit richer colors. So that's why I chose that. Because sometimes beach scenes get a little washed out. It's just like sand and water and air. So this, it's beautiful. I love it.
Oh, that's so great. So here's the offer right now, you guys. You're going to get 30% off your painting as a limited time offer. 30% and free shipping. So if you want to see my painting, they will actually show it to you. And to get this special offer, text the word MOM to 797979. Again, M-O-M to 797979. You'll get to see my painting. So one more time, text the word MOM to 797979 and message and data rates may apply. Hey, Megan, we are heading to Nashville in November. Woohoo! I'm so excited because you have been to the Blistem conference before, but I have not. And I've never been to Nashville. So I'm doubly excited.
And I'm excited because I love Blistem.
Yes, I know. And we are actually hoping that some of you listeners out there will join us for Blistem November 14th through 16th. It's one of the premier conferences for lifestyle content creators. That's all of you writers, podcasters, speakers, entrepreneurs, social media mamas, all of you out there. So back when it was founded in 2008, Blistem came to life to develop conversations among bloggers and brands. And now, over 10 years later, the Blistem community has evolved to become the leaders, teachers, and mentors in the writing, podcasting, influencer marketing, and content creation space. That is our space. That's where we live.
Sure is.
So if this sounds like a conference that you would benefit from, you and your business or your blog, head to themomhour.com/Blistem. That's B-L-I-S-S-D-O-M. And use the promo code BLISS50 to save $50 off your registration. We would love for you to come hang out with us in Nashville in November. Again, we've got the link at themomhour.com/Blistem. All right. I am back with Casey Clifford talking about her infertility journey. So let's get back in. And I want to kind of fast forward Beatrice's pregnancy and kind of get to the moment where you are now a brand new mom, which is something a lot of our listeners can relate to, however they got there with, you know, with fertility struggles or not. And adjusting to new motherhood is no joke, especially when you are also a business owner, a musician, you're part of a marriage, you are now 38. Like what role did the infertility journey, how did that have a seat at the table in your adjustment to new motherhood?
I think my answer to that is twofold. One is new motherhood was terrifying for me. And it wasn't until I got some retrospect, some hindsight on it, that I realized that I had put everything on the line to create her. Mm-hmm. And then here she was, yeah. and I didn't want to ruin her kill her or, you know, like, you know, she had all sorts of, Beatrice is a sensory kid, but we didn't know it until she was two. And so infancy was really difficult because you could meet all of her needs that you thought you were supposed to meet and she would still be unhappy. And feeding was difficult. And so, so even in those, just those early weeks were really brutal, mm-hmm. like trying to breastfeed. My milk didn't establish. Yeah. I was older. You know, I met with 100 lactation consultants who most of whom shamed me. Like, and then finally someone said, you know, Casey, there's no wrong way to feed your baby.
Oh, good.
Like, and then my doctor looked at me and was like, Casey, mental health wise, we're not doing it this way. Like, we're not going to do the crazy, like we're going to integrate her. You're going to give her what you can at the breast. We're going to do the bottle and she's going to be okay. Like, and so really kind of having people surrounding me who were my village, who helped me see kind of the light of sanity.
Yeah.
But I think because of what I had been through fertility wise, it all felt the stakes were so high.
Yes. I can see that.
And so I've had kind of a, and I don't think, obviously that has calmed down mm-hmm. in the last almost 7 years. I'm much calmer and confident in myself as a mom. But because I almost had this thing where I was like, do I not deserve to be here? Do I have what she needs? Mm-hmm. I had kind of this whole emotional becoming a mom awakened a lot of worth issues for me mm-hmm. that were dormant for a long time, which is not a fertility discussion. We can have that discussion another time. But so the other way that it has radically affected my parenting is, you don't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah.
I have gratitude and joy and I am in awe of my kids every single minute that I get to be with them, even when they're being really rude or ill-behaved. Like I look at them and I still get chills at the thought of them and their existence because they were the thing I never thought I would get.
Yeah.
And so it really does color my parenting because people think, gosh, Casey, you're so patient or you're, you know, whatever. And I'm like, no, I just want them to know how valuable they are. Mm-hmm. Like they exist and it's the most wonderful thing. And I want them to be known and seen and heard. And mm-hmm. like, so I think I approach parenting. I hope I do anyway, most days with a sense of wonder at it all. And I value them in a way that most moms who just have sex and create a baby, they don't have that same level.
Yeah. And I think other moms who went through the infertility journey, I'm sure that's a common feeling. Like it just puts things in perspective, the tantrums and the, you know, the little things.
Yeah. I mean, I remember throwing up when I was pregnant and David was like at the bathroom door, like, oh God, babe, I'm so sorry. You're morning sick. And I stood up and I was like, I'm throwing up.
Yes.
Like, you know, oh my gosh. And it's the same thing when they were baby. Like, look at this poopy diaper. I never thought I'd get to do this. Yeah. Like it just, you know, it's a thing you never thought you'd get. Yeah. And so you appreciate it in a different way.
I love that. Well, let's talk about your secondary infertility because I don't even know if that's clinically the right term. I know maybe that's more for people who conceived easily the first time and then have trouble the second time, but talk about little Hollis and how he came to be after all this.
Sure. Well, when Beatrice was one, about one and a half, actually, I guess we decided that we would start trying and we wanted to try again. We knew we wanted two, if possible, if the God and science would give us that. Mm-hmm. And, Dr. Craig had said, you know, sometimes, infertility, people who've struggled with infertility, once they conceive and carry a baby to term, you can have kind of a physical reproductive reset button. And so she was like, I would encourage you to try for a few months on your own and see if it happens, but don't go more than about 3 months before if you're not pregnant, come see me. And so we weren't pregnant. My body didn't come with one of those reset buttons. Mm-hmm. And so we went back to her and met with her and she's like, you know, I think that since IUI and this specific course of meds and injections worked for you, let's try that again. And it costs this much and it's not free this time. And, you know, so it's like, we had to kind of, rally our troops and, our money and our family helped some. And so we started to have IUIs and honestly, because of the way that it worked with B, I thought, well, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time we're going to do it, this the first time. And then it didn't. And then the second time it didn't. And by the third time I was really, really disheartened. Ironically enough, my treatment had failed while at the Kerrville Folk Festival. We ended up coming home from the festival early that year because I just kind of couldn't emotionally, when you're pumping your body full of hormones that aren't normally there, and you're jacking with your, the doctor has hijacked your system, that has a toll on your body, on your tolerance for people and the elements of life, it affects everything. Mm-hmm. And you are on a roller coaster physically, hormonally, emotionally, all of it. Mm-hmm. And so it can't be underscored enough, mm-hmm. the toll that that takes. And so we ended up going through four, and by then I had started doing acupuncture for fertility. I was doing supplements.
You were back on the, we're going to fix this, but round two with different information
And why isn't it working? Right. And I don't understand. And all Dr. Craig could say was, well, you're older, you're almost 40. It's like, oh my gosh. So we went through our fourth treatment and it actually gave us, it was excruciating because it gave us a positive blood test.
Oh, gosh.
And then we weren't pregnant. It was like a chemical pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a sick joke from the universe. And so we had a consult with Dr. Craig after the fourth round, and the way that IUIs work, at least back then, I'm guessing the science is similar now, but that your chances are the same over four tries.
Okay.
And then after the fourth try, your chances start to go down, down, down.
Okay.
And the average healthy woman, when she has sex in the right time period, she has about a 25% chance of getting pregnant.
Okay.
For me, my chances normally, even with help, were less than 10%, in 4% range.
Okay.
And so I don't know how they get all those numbers. Yeah. But your chances were going down and down and down the more IUIs you tried, and they're expensive. And so it was okay, well, we can't do this again. And she kind of just looked at me and was like, we're at the end of the road, and I think we need to do IVF. And, you need to decide if you can afford it. And if you want to go through it, it's pretty rigorous. And I had told David that I would know when I was done, mm-hmm. That I would emotionally know I was going to trust my gut to tell me when I couldn't do it any more treatments. And I hadn't reached that point. And my parents agreed to help us, mm-hmm. with IVF. And so, my dad was like, we'll do one, and, mm-hmm. and I was so grateful and overwhelmed at their generosity. And so started my treatments on my 40th birthday, which I don't recommend, on a lot of levels. a month later, and so we went through, IVF. So IVF is you're on medicine before your treatments start because they're hijacking your system, mm-hmm. early, and they're preparing your body. And then you go on really high doses of hormones because they're trying to stimulate as many eggs, as many follicles as they can, mm-hmm. in both ovaries, to then go in and have a surgical procedure where they take a giant, cartoon size needle, and they stick it through the side of your vaginal wall up into your ovaries, and they suck all the follicles, all the eggs out of each ovary, and you're under anesthesia. And I remember I was under, and it's one of those ones where they wake you up fast. You don't remember it, but you're not, I don't know what they call it, but it was one of those anesthesias, super technical medical terms, one of those.
Yeah.
But I woke up, and in front of me on the wall, there's this ticker counter thing, and it has a number. And when I had gone to sleep, it had said 0. And when I woke up, it said 23. And it was something that was attached to the lab. And as they were getting follicles out of the needles, they were tallying their count. And so I looked up and knew that we had achieved 23 eggs.
Okay.
And I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. We have 23. And, so what they do is they fertilize, David had given a sample, they fertilize those. The surgery was much harder on my body than I thought. I thought like I would be back at it the next morning, and it really took a toll on me. That was one of the most surprising parts of the process, was how hard that was and how much cramping, how uncomfortable it actually is when they do that to your girl parts. And of course then like your hormone levels drop immediately, right? Like, and so you're going through kind of this physical, like a fun house, terrifying fun house with like scary clowns, right? Like scary clown fun house in your body. And cause you're at the risk of like hyperstimulating because they've given you so much estrogen that your body, you know, kind of goes into overdrive and you can get really sick. And so they're kind of monitoring you. And that next morning I wasn't feeling well and the doctor wanted to see me. So I went in and a doctor and she wasn't there. So one of her fellows was there and he ends up coming in and checking on me for hyperstimulation. But then he was like, oh, by the way, you had 4 eggs fertilized. You have 4 embryos. And I had gone from 23 to 4 overnight. Wow. And I started to bawl. And he was like so uncomfortable with my emotions that he left the room.
Oh my gosh.
And sent a nurse in to help me, which was hilarious. And I was like, what do you mean 4? And like, and then she was like, he wasn't even really supposed to tell you that. Dr. Craig was going to call you late. You know, it was like, oh my gosh. And so, and then they grade your embryos. And they give you like, which is weird. Yeah. Like there's like A plus to like D minus or something. And
another thing to measure yourself and feel great about.
Yeah. Because my embryos even need grades.
Yeah.
She's like, don't be too concerned about the grades. They can shift. An embryo can improve or decrease its viability overnight. And so then they're sending you like pictures of your little cells, multiplying, like almost like an ultrasound, right? I have an ultrasound of Hollis.
Wow.
In, you know, a cell form.
Yeah.
And then every day they call you and they say, here's where your embryos are. This is how many survive. So by the second day, I only had 3 that were surviving. And they were like B plus down to C. And then by the third day, one of them had improved. And then on the 4th day, she was like, okay, we're ready. Your embryos are ready to implant. So we have the implantation that happened that day. And she went ahead and implanted 3 embryos, which was a little aggressive, but I wanted her to do that because I wanted a baby and I didn't want to go through this again.
Yeah.
And because she was like, I've never had a set of triplets with a 40-year-old, which is like everyone knocking on wood, right?
Yeah. There's a first time for everything.
Totally. And so she did my implantation and then we waited, you know, it's like another 2-week wait. And I'll never forget in the middle of that. I haven't ever really told this story, but in somewhere, gosh, like in the first week of waiting, I started to bleed.
Oh, wow.
And I was like on my knees, devastated. Like this is, oh my God, it's not working. And literally friends, I think David must've sent a text message or something. Cause we had like kind of our village of people who were watching out for us through it and kind of walking. And it was my birthday week. And it was like, and so birthday month, we were celebrating with people and people like showed up at my door.
Wow.
And like sat with me and they're like, no, we're not, we're believe there's going to be a baby. I'll never forget. My friend Amy was like, she lives 4 doors down from me. And she was like, just so you know, we're having a baby shower for this baby at my house. And I am planning it in my head and this is going to happen. And like that moment where like the village rose up around me when I couldn't believe. Mm-hmm. And then I was pregnant.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was implantation bleeding.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess, it was a little weirdly timed implantation bleeding for what it was. But then they called me and said, you're pregnant and it worked. And I was floored.
I would love to shift and talk about, because music and being a musician is a central part of your identity. And we've now heard, you know, a 5-6 year period where you also had this intense personal journey. I'm curious how your songwriting and your kind of connection to your craft, I mean, did they overlap and intertwine? Was work and this was separate? How did those two things interplay?
I'm sure that there are songwriters for whom their emotions are not involved. but I am super not one of those. Yeah. You know, songwriting has always been an outlet for me, and it's really a thing that's helped keep me sane.
Yeah.
And this was no exception. I think being able to talk about the reality of what we were going through and how hard it was, and acknowledging the hard, and then eventually acknowledging the hard publicly, you know, from stage, and kind of addressing it with people, and then seeing the effect that being vulnerable and standing in your story, what that does to other people, and how that frees them up to live in their own truth. And to kind of, by telling my story and singing about my story, I took my power back. I took the power that I had given over to the traumatic experience of going through all of that. And I took a little bit of it back, and I decided that I got to kind of choose how it ends and choose how I see it and frame it.
So what does that look like in a concert? Like, if I came to a show and you played a couple of songs, and I'm sure you tell the story before the song and kind of set it up, are people crying in the audience? Are they coming up to you after? Are you now kind of the voice of other women who share this experience?
Yes. I mean, to be clear, yes. And I
mean that in like, you are not the anointed voice of everyone who's ever gotten, but for that moment, you kind of are. If somebody is in that room and they are not a singer songwriter, they're seeing and hearing themselves through your song.
Yeah. And my goal here on earth as a person, and really as an artist and writer, is to help people feel less alone in their lives, one story and one song at a time. And it's not unusual for women or men to come up to me after a show and say, I've never heard you before. A friend brought me, you know, I cried four times tonight, you know, that song, you know, I went through a fertility struggle, you know, my kids are IVF kids, or, you know, it's amazing just getting to kind of connect with people on a real human level. We have so much fluff and vitriol, and just the discourse that we're under is so hurtful right now. And so to be a voice that affirms and hears and values real, raw vulnerability in the beautiful hard of it, I think is, we need more of that. And I'm honored to get to bring a voice to that. I really tell my stories so that I can have power back in my own life. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that it was helping other people. And that was this amazing fringe benefit.
Yeah. No, I love that. Well, before we wrap up, this time has just flown by. But I want to hear a little bit about what you're working on right now in your songwriting. And we definitely will send everybody will have all the links of where to find you. So don't feel like you have to lay out your tour schedule here on the podcast, but, what are you working on right now? What's filling you up work-wise? And how's being a musician working mom right now with a 7 and a 4-year-old?
I feel like how it is changes every day depending on the mood or development milestone of my children. But I am, the most exciting thing that's happening for me work-wise right now is that I am setting up to release my 7th album. It's the first studio album that I've made since that phone call that told me I got into the study to have B.
Yeah.
And so 7 years in the making. You know, in those years I thought, am I ever going to do this again? You know, up nights at 3 a.m. with children. I didn't know what it was going to look like. We tried to tour with B and she wasn't suited for it. And so we kind of had to back up and regroup. And so now here the kids are 7 and 4 and they're, you know, in just kind of a totally different season of life. Like we just kind of hit the light at the end of the tunnel of like infancy and toddlerhood.
Yep.
And like Hollis is potty trained. It's like, oh, and he doesn't nap anymore. And, you know, B like has more regulation than she's had before. And so it's like, oh my gosh, I could actually do this. Mm-hmm. I could actually start to have the headspace. And so I've written this record and it's all on piano. So it's a totally different thing than I've ever done before. And we are putting all the finishing touches on the artwork and the videos and the content of it right now. And it will begin to release to streaming services coming in the coming months, and then will be officially released everywhere for sale after the first of the year in early 2020.
Okay. And we're going to get to hear, but I'll tease this. I'm not kicking you out just yet, but
no,
for
good.
Listeners, we're going to play one song in its entirety from that new album. The song is called Worth the Wait. And so you're going to want to listen all the way to the end, because that is like, that's a real preview, right? I didn't realize the album won't really be out for quite a while. So that's a treat for our listeners.
Yeah. And it's the very first thing anyone has heard anywhere of the record.
Ooh.
Literally, like, only my very closest people have heard anything. And so this is the first public debut of a single on the record here on the Mom Hour.
I don't think I realized that. I knew we were going to give a wonderful preview, but well, let's talk about that song a little bit then, because we're,
I wrote Worth the Wait as a song. I realized that as I stand up night after night and write things on the internet that will stay there forever, whether I like it or not, that I was telling the story of how hard and painful and heartbreaking it was to go through the process of making my kids. And I never wanted my children to happen upon some of my writing and think that they had hurt me or that they were a mistake or that they were too hard.
Right. That they cost you in some way.
Yeah. That they were the reason that I had suffered. And so I wanted to write a song that was just unwaveringly true about how much I would do every single piece of it again if it meant that I got to have them in the end.
Right.
And I wanted them to have this touchstone piece of art that their mom had done that they could go back and hear, like, you were worth it. Like, I would every needle, every ultrasound, every bloody morning, like, I would do 100% of it over and over and over again if it meant that I got to behold your face and know your sweet heart and personalities and get to watch you grow and figure out who you are. Like, so yeah,
it's a celebration. It's a celebration. And, probably one, you're now 4 years past even that second experience. And I would imagine you couldn't have written that song with little babies and toddlers. It almost took the took the time to process and to start to think about what is the rest of this story gonna be, and what is the story my kids are going to interpret. I think that's something a lot of moms start to think about when their kids get older. It's like, oh wait, they are going to read the internet and, you know, participate in this world. And so I love that that's a continuation of their story. Well, Casey, tell everybody where to find you online, the simplest place. And then in our show notes, we will link up everything people need to know to find your current records, the records that are out there right now and your website and all that. But what's the easiest place to send them?
Yeah, the easiest place kind of as a hub is caseyclifford.com. It's my website, and it can get you everywhere else typically. And my name is initial, so it's a K and a C, Clifford. So not C-A-S-E-Y, like
right.
It sounds.
Right. Well, we are just so thankful that you took the time to share your story today. And listeners, stick around, and you're going to hear the full first airing or release of Worth the Wait by Casey Clifford. And Casey, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. It's been a pleasure.
There were sleepless nights where my strength was gone and my patience was tried. I was short on hope. There was so much more that I wanted from life. And who knew? Thank you. but my strength is gone, my patience is tried. But there's no place that I would rather be right here.
Who knew you'd come along?